Welcome to Syncifying Syncify. On the show, we find the best content on building your startup. We then sync up and explain our biggest lessons to you, the listener, and try to apply those learnings to our own startup, Syncify. We look at what we can do as a young startup, building the future of social audio, and give some insights into what really happens as you build an idea into an actual business. I'm Sam Harris, your host and the CEO of Syncify. This season, we are syncing up over the Y Combinator Startup School series of lectures, which are a really good resource for anyone trying to build a business or launch something. You can also join the Y Combinator Startup School for free yourself online if you're interested and enjoy the content. I'm delighted to be joined the entire season by my co-host Jack Hughes, who is both my best friend and business partner here at Syncify.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Syncifying Syncify. Today, it is going to be the Y Combinator podcast, Building Culture with Tim Brady. We're going to run through it quickly, and then we're going to do as we usually do, and that is to talk about it and apply it to Syncify ourselves and some past experiences. So, building culture, he starts very promptly by explaining that a culture is essentially a set of behaviors that show people how to behave even when it hasn't been said. Basically, to imply that there's some kind of way of acting within the company that is the standard expected requirement, and if you are not doing this, then you are not really hitting the cultural mark laid out by the company. Usually this is either explained to you by someone when you're joining, or sometimes you just kind of get that feeling and you quickly adapt. I guess if you're in a very strict classroom or in a very relaxed classroom, it doesn't take long to realize which one you're in based on the people acting around you. His essential thing is to think that the right behavior is good business, essentially. A right behavior equals good business, a healthy business. And he talks about the stages of a company and the different stages of it, including idea and then product market fit and scale. And he said, there is no time that is too early to establish a culture, because as soon as you have an idea, the idea itself has some culture to it. When you have a product market fit, you usually go through an investment round or something like that, which means you're about to hire people. And when you scale, you're definitely doing a whole load of hiring there. And if you suddenly start trying to do the culture things when you're about to hire between 15 to 20 people in a period of 3 to 6 months, it's usually too late to do so. One of the big points he makes after this is that the first set of employees need to have the strongest possible cultural values laid out by the founders. What that does is it creates a very good pyramid of the hiring that goes beneath them. So probably after the co-founders, you're going to have the VPs or employees number 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, which tend to be like the lifeblood of the company after the founders. You have the hiring teams, they're going to have managers beneath them. They're going to help you expand into different territories or within the same bracket or county that you're residing at the moment. And he said there are 6 major things that you can do now that can help you build that culture. And the first one is to really understand and be proud of the problem you are solving. So he mentions that there have been cases where he's been dealing with the founders and even they've had very good traction. They've had really, really good revenue as well. So growth and revenue. But they actually weren't really that fussed in what they were about to do. And the company ultimately failed. I think what he was talking about was one of the founders was kind of lured into different things and they weren't really on track with one another. The second one is to have a long-term vision and draw out specifically how you're going to get there. That is a way of really understanding if you're off the path or if you are bang on it. I think it's also handy when you have a board and they understand exactly what your long-term vision is. And then they talked about that with the founders and the founders then talk about it with the people beneath them, et cetera, et cetera.
In terms of long-term vision worth following, it's pretty clear when you have companies like Tesla and they just want to sort of accelerate human transition to sort of sustainable energy. It's like, yeah, it's a really huge thing you can buy into, or SpaceX, like get humans on to be a multi-planetary species. This is like huge goals and like visions. And when the vision is, if it's just like, okay, let's try and make the founders rich, that's where things go really wrong. If like you don't really see what the company's doing and how it's going to change the world. And so you really need to sort of understand the long view of what the company's going to do and like have something that's actually going to be something you want to buy into as an employee to like get into that culture or any of the directors and all these kind of things. It just sort of helps make a cohesive team of people that actually are more excited. It gives you a reason to get up in the morning.
I agree. And I think that's actually a really good example with like Elon Musk as well, because it's like the cult of culture, because Elon Musk himself, it's almost half his vision of what he wants to do with Tesla, SpaceX, also that the vision itself is completely entirely wrapped into Elon Musk. And so when he hires people out of Stanford and he takes the best possible people, they know there's an expectation of what they're trying to accomplish is such an outrageously in the future vision that the only thing that's going to lead to success is an incredibly hardworking culture. So understanding what that long-term vision is means that when you start working the day one there, you know that it's going to be a lot of hard work because that's the only way you're going to be able to hit the goals that he sets out. The next one is listing your values and model behavior. So, and I think one of the good ones that he mentioned was Google set out, don't be evil, which is quite an interesting way of going about business. Just like they have to tell themselves, don't be evil. That was amazing.
Yeah, it kind of attracted attention to the thing though with the Google, because like there's a lot of potential to be evil and you're not always getting it right, as in I think it had actually helped them a lot in many ways, as in like they've got like the one day a week sort of working on what you want and the amount of potential that they could have had for people to do really shit stuff, but because they had the motto, they don't think they've done half as bad as they could have done. And if you think about the bad things that Facebook have done, like Google could have easily done a lot worse, even though we give them a bad rap. But they still like still kind of drew attention to them in some ways. But it's hard because you can't have like an A/B test of like, what would Google be like if they hadn't had that motto? So you can sort of judge them on it. So maybe it was a good thing.
It's funny how you mentioned Facebook, because the next point was align culture with customer, and Facebook's was move fast and break things. So essentially what you're doing is move fast, keep innovating. Oh, but by the way, if we want to like potentially take your data and make it not that safe and other people can access it and kind of do stuff with it, then maybe we've moved a little bit too fast. We have to make sure we dot the I's and cross the T's here.
It's one of those dangerous philosophies. It's really good for improvement and like in that kind of stuff. But as in, that was sort of my philosophy around skiing. As in, if I ever had a day where I didn't fall over, I wasn't trying hard enough and I wasn't innovating or improving because I hadn't done something that was out of my capability. It was a good metric.
And then the next one is discussing the importance of diversity in your company. And his point was like, do this early, especially nowadays. If a company isn't like thinking about this as one of the first things you write down, I think if Jeff Bezos was to go back and to start Amazon now, it would be like he'd have his Amazon.com on that, in the handwritten note on that banner, and then underneath it would be like diversity, because it's such an important thing to do and getting ahead of the game there. And it's also something that's going to give you incredible strength as well as a company, especially one like ours. So he's like, definitely do that as soon as possible. And the last one was put a hiring plan in place, almost like a policy document based on the 5 or 6 things you look for in a character profile, and challenge that person on each of the ones that you hold dear. And it's a really good way of assessing if someone is amazing on paper. Let's say you want someone to be tenacious, or you want someone to be challenging, or you want someone to be, you know, candid, then they need to hit those as well as the things that are written down on their paper. And also, if someone's not as bright, but it's just such a good cultural fit, then that's also a really good way of assessing someone as well. So yeah, those are the main parts. Did you enjoy it, Sam?
I'm not sure it was my favorite, like you said it was your favorite, but I thought it was great.
I find it the most interesting because I see it as the most valuable, because my experiences tell me that when culture is slightly off, it's something that's incredibly hard to fix. Whereas if your product is bad, then you can reiterate the product to give it some improvement. But when a culture is bad, it's incredibly hard to fix because you have to basically follow it all the way back up, and where it usually rests is with one of the founders, and that's not where you want to be.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like thinking of the different companies that I've worked in and how cultures worked and this kind of stuff. But I guess I feel like I sort of already knew these things a bit more, whereas like some of the other lectures I think has like changed my thinking at a bit more fundamental level. It's like, oh, I really need to change the way I'm doing these things. It gave me a lot extra that much, but it's hard to say. As in, maybe in a few months' time when we suddenly got a whole team, I was like, crap. But I think I have kind of optimized for working in ways that gives me the culture that I want in terms of the way my life is, and I haven't really stuck around in teams that I haven't enjoyed, and I've kind of gone more for like, okay, I'll just sort of work remotely with people that I like spending my time with, and I'll just go and have like a nice life doing these fun things. And so my culture's kind of just been created around me, because like it's sort of how I tend to go around things.
That would be the perfect world, but those kind of things don't happen without either incredible luck.
Yeah, I haven't done that at a scaled level, so I think how to make it work as a bigger process is going to be interesting. But we should go through the first ones, and then we've got some other questions as well, I guess.
Going back to the 6 things is probably the best thing, rather than going right from the word go. So proud of the problem we're solving. Big tick on that one, I'd say, no?
Yeah, so I think it's something that's been pissing me off for so long that is why I started it. And so I think the initial problem, just like podcasting, it's just really useful for myself from like a learning and like learning perspective. But then like the bigger vision that we have of just generally syncifying people and getting people more in touch with each other in ways that aren't currently possible is like sort of really huge. We could do better at necessarily explaining it in sort of like the one line, like Tesla accelerate human transition to clean energy. We haven't quite done that. I think in my head, I've got something around another Elon Musk project, which is the neural link, which directly understand other people's thoughts. And that's kind of what I want this to do, is in to be able to actually understand how people are thinking better and or what they've been thinking about. Because it's interesting, let's say someone speaks to me and if they've listened to a few of my podcasts, I instantly know what they know about me a bit more. I just have a better grasp of them. And it's just so useful when we both know the same thing, when we both listen to the same episode. I know what you know to then like try to going forwards. And that's what I want to link into, is and I want people to understand what other people know and actually kind of be more aligned on their thinking. And you don't have to think the same thing about the thing. You can challenge each other's views, but you can understand where you're coming from. You don't have to spend time trying to explain things. And that's the point of Neuralink, is that you don't waste time trying to explain things. You can like understand what's going on, so you can kind of tell people like your history of what's been going on in your head and these kind of things.
Are you going to be like trialing your Neuralink as soon as it's out? Are you going to be like, yes, give it to me?
I think I'm happy to wait for like trials to see how that goes. There's a little myself going into my brain for without severe testing. I'm sure like there's going to be a lot of severe testing before it's ever something that you can pay for.
But in terms of the long-term goals, like understanding and appreciating what other people are thinking in order to like syncify your own thoughts, I guess. But do you see it also as that kind of, like I give the example of my dad, and I realized the other day that my dad and I only talk about me. I don't like that. I would like to talk about something else with him.
So as in, I have the same thing with my grandpa's, and I wouldn't speak to him about that much, but he did a lot of reading. And like, why couldn't I be reading the same things as him? Because then I'd understand what he knows and I could talk about those other things with him. And it gives me a reason to talk about stuff, as opposed to like, okay, he's just at home all day, like retired and doesn't do anything. And I do these other things, but he doesn't quite know that much because he's sort of from a different sort of age. And he can't really relate to me too much on the stuff that I do, even though like he's a clever guy and like it would be nice to talk to him. And so just having a shared knowledge of something gives you the ability to talk, and knowing what that knowledge is like the important part, like the transparency around what it is that other people know makes it much easier to talk about these things.
I feel like a lot of people, especially older people, they've struggled to keep up with like modern ways of connecting with people, and less people generally calling each other. More people are like either WhatsApping or just Facebooking each other. And especially at times like now, you can't share outdoor moments with each other. It's just impossible, really, especially if you're vulnerable. So I think giving the opportunity to listen to a podcast or audiobook with someone who can do that, and then you guys discuss it. It's just like, oh, this is a new hobby we've invented that was already there, but no one saw it as like a hobby that you can actually really benefit from in so many ways.
A few people would do, but like, there was just a high friction cost and it was just a lot of effort to go around to make it happen. But when we sort of make it effortless and like the natural thing to do, because it's sort of more enticing than doing the other thing, then you're just going to do it because of, I'm going to listen to podcasts anyway in my time. If it's more enticing because of it's literally there as the option, oh, Jack's listening to this one, I'll just press that button because it's in front of me. Whereas I'm not going to message you every time I'm about to listen to a podcast when I've got like the 2 seconds before I start running, when I choose what podcast to listen to, I'm not going to be like, oh, Jack, so I've seen this podcast, I'm going to send you a message. You're not going to receive this for like half an hour for you to then wait. It just doesn't work. Whereas if transparently there, it's just so nice and easy and just making it simple.
So the second one is create a long-term vision.
We have like the long-term vision, but we haven't like said it in a sentence.
It's on its way. We know it, but it sounds kind of big and wavy. And I think we need to get it a little bit more precise. So that's probably something we're going to do some attention on. It's not like the biggest one that we need to do right now. List your values and model behavior. I think this is something we're going to really enjoy. I already had like a kind of established a couple, and one of them was like understand first as like a cultural value. Just understand first was one of the ones that came to mind immediately, because one of the things people do is they have like their own beliefs. My dad is especially someone who has his own beliefs about a lot of things. And as soon as you talk to him about it or try and challenge it, he won't try and understand what your point of view is. It's more important that he pushes his view and his doesn't get like done. So I think one of the things that Syncify work is willing to understand the other person's view. And that way you can appreciate it and learn from it. And then you kind of grow together. So I think it's like an employee value. Having someone that can like understands first or appreciates first is incredibly important, rather than just kind of going, no matter how outrageous the opinion is, understand where it's coming from and appreciate why that person have that opinion. That to me is very important, and it stops like huge clashes going on. What do you think about that?
I think I believe in that so much that it's almost annoying that I even had to hear you say that. It's sort of like, I even have to have this conversation. What's going on?
Yes, you do. People don't do that, man. People just so entrenched in their own things. Honestly, they are. Do you not think you're a little bit like that?
Yeah, I think I'm getting better at these things. I'm not like perfect, but I'm not as bad as I was. I think understanding things properly, being honest with people and transparent are just like givens that we have to do, and trying to make things nice and happy and the other stuff that's like working out how to optimize for that and sort of be models of those things and be responsible humans.
So that was listing your values and model behavior. Anyway, align culture with customer. This is literally what we're doing right now. We are trying to Syncify, and everything about what we're doing is set up to provide a platform of learning, understanding, sharing, and all that kind of stuff. And if we get that wrong, we're essentially not a business. It's important when we become a revenue generating business that our culture resonates with those kind of things as well. And I think that's a little bit more he's implying with Yahoo as opposed to the user, maybe. I know how important it is to be very truthful and manage expectations of clients, especially when you're starting out. And promising something, getting a load of money in, especially for a startup, seems incredibly attractive. And there's been a few companies who've done that and ended up letting them down. But with us, we have to be product first, and we are a user-facing product. And so we're not going to be able to jeopardize their experience to benefit a potential client. It just isn't wise. But also, if a client comes on board and understands the culture of what we're trying to do, then we'll be able to develop a suitable partnership, which completely benefits us and the user and the advertising partner. So I think that's a really, really strong one, personally. Next one is discussing the importance of diversity in your company. I think we've tapped on this already.
It's super important to us. I think practicalities and making it happen are a bit harder. If you, I love diversity. I think it's super important and we need it.
I research this because I'm really bright and I'm ahead of the game and all that kind of stuff. And I'm a cultural warrior. So positive discrimination is illegal, like flat out illegal.
We talk about the importance of diversity, and like, if it, you think about it, it's value exchange, what you get from the employee versus what you give them. And like, if you do get more value from having some more diversity and their level on every other playing field, you are literally getting more by hiring that other person. So it makes business sense to hire them just because it expands your views, because they can think about other things. So they are actually better as a candidate. Then the last one was put a hiring process into practice. We're going to have to start hiring people now as we're getting money and we need people to do things. So yeah, it was useful to go through this whole thing and then like work out what our hiring process is going to be and sort of interviews and getting people aligned on culture.
I know you've been self-employed a lot and I know you've run your own companies and done this kind of thing. You've also worked at a couple of places and I wanted to know if you ever saw like culture fail and what were the ramifications?
My first job as a coder, like I sort of interviewed with the CTO, is really nice, and then like the CEO like had a really good interview. I thought they were really great. So I was pretty excited. And then like on the first day, sort of just kind of got put in a corner. Just everyone was silent. And I was in this office with like 15 people and like no one spoke at all. No one even said hi or like sort of had any sort of like welcome, like great to have a new member of the team. And it was just like, what the fuck's going on? And it was just like a really weird place to be for the next 3 months. And like people just didn't really talk much. And it was just sort of like, there was just no culture. And it was kind of quite dead. And yeah, you just spent your time like not really knowing what to do or who to talk to about things. And I think the CEO was still like a good guy, but he was really busy. And like the CTO, he wasn't really a manager. He was just like a really good coder who didn't know how to express his thoughts and talk to people or like help them. And so he kind of tried to run away from people most of the time and just so he could do some work by himself. And he didn't really help others or like code review or do anything useful, even though he was a super smart guy, but he just wasn't like a manager as such. And yeah, so when the main people were out of the office, we'd all talk and be like, what's going on? I don't know. And we just sort of have a chat. And like, it wasn't the culture of being aligned on what was sort of like the vision and like making stuff happen. And like, it wasn't like the most compelling vision anyway of like just getting people sort of short-term crap. So once a month, we sort of went for like a meal, which is kind of nice. And like, it helped a little bit on the culture, but there wasn't like a culture of hanging out or sort of getting people to become friends and understand each other. I wasn't like excited to go to work with the other people that much, even though I sort of managed to force it a bit with some of the other coders. I actually kind of became friends like almost in private, despite the company, if that makes sense. It wasn't like a culture that sort of made you like excited to be there. I didn't feel like I was part of a family or something.
Do you think there's a correlating path between the harder the work, the more camaraderie, and the easier the work, like the less camaraderie? Because you know the camaraderie that like exists, let's say if you were in the Marines or if you were in like a brutal sales force. I imagine the camaraderie in those kind of places is very intense and very like jovial and kind of hard. But if you're like working for a tech company and you've got some bits and bobs to do, and it's a lot of work, but your paycheck isn't on the line or your life isn't on the line, don't you think it's more likely to have a culture where you just aren't?
When you don't feel like you have ownership of making something happen, you're just never so bothered or invested. As in, if your work doesn't feel meaningful to where the company's going, it's never that interesting. So if you're doing something that's kind of easy and that someone else could do anyway, you're not that bothered about doing a good job yourself. Whereas if you sort of feel that you're making a real difference to things, that's always very compelling. So basically, bad cultures just have a cost of people just not working very hard or being that interested or like really caring about the business.
I found culture very weird because I didn't really know what culture was. I left uni when I was 21. And I had a job before I'd even graduated. I was just in a sales force in a recruitment company in the center of London. I was just there to do a job. I was in this crappy office with people who were pretty cool. And it was a competitive environment because everyone had their name on the board of like how much money they were making the company. So I guess that culture is inherently bad because it was all processes and just calling people. So it wasn't really a nice culture because it wasn't a lot of us. It was just hard and no one was getting paid a lot. And the manager was just a bit vain. And he was 28 and just was quite... I don't know about himself when he had this little office in Covent Garden. He thought it was like his world. So it was an odd environment. So I didn't think there was culture there. But when I was working at bars, there was awesome culture, like the best culture ever, because we were making cocktails, hundreds and hundreds of them a night. We both needed to be working really hard because we both wanted the tips. We realized it was quite fun what we were doing. We got to socialize. The culture that I remember the best is the recruitment company I worked for in Cornwall, because everyone bloody loved each other. Even the people who I probably am like, I was least close to there, I still really liked. Now I look at all the other people I've met since leaving Cornwall. I liked every single one of them. Loads of them are still there. There's huge staying power. Like I think the average staff time now is something like 3 years, which is crazy, especially in sales. It's a long time to stick around. People have progressed, have become managers. The director's still there. People have left and come back to that company. And do you know what's funny about it? There aren't any cultural values. They're not written anywhere. I think what happens is people like and respect the natural flow of the company. People like each other. They want to do well for each other. You are there at 9 o'clock. You leave at 5. You don't stay after 5. It's not company policy. And so culture is something very weird and requires work. It's something you have to work incredibly hard on. Otherwise, it's going to cost you a lot in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. I'm certainly thinking like of the first people I'm hiring are people that like I've worked with who are super good, but I also really, really like and just like excited to be able to spend time with them. Is in terms of like, if you're going to, is in, if they like, maybe as in, there's a certain people that I would love to go on holiday with just because I'd love spending time with them anyway, but then they also work really well. So I'd love to be working with them kind of thing. And they're sort of the people you want to have around, I guess. So I'm hoping to kind of keep that policy out somehow. Anyway, you wanted to talk about onboarding culture, which I think is an interesting thing to consider because we are going to have to onboard people. I've had a few good experiences with that. As in, my CEO at CrowdEmotions was really good at culture, I feel. They had like one developer come from South America and he literally went to Heathrow to meet him off the plane and ride the tube back with him into London and make him feel really welcome. And I think that was really nice. And he just went a bit out of the way to like make people feel like he really cared for them, as well as, you know, one-on-ones and those kind of things that are just sort of useful. And everyone had a good introduction to the team when I started, because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I just sort of said that I was a bit of a hustler and entrepreneur and stuff. And so he just let me tag him. I came to like all of his meetings and everything and just sort of went around London with him and just understood what he was thinking and like asked him loads of questions. I just got like super into everything that he was doing to work out like what I could do best. And it was just really fascinating to go around with someone who was like super important and doing all this crazy stuff and just being involved in those meetings. And it was just so nice to feel a part of it rather than just being sort of put on a desk somewhere and sort of been given some things to try and like work something out. He didn't do that for everyone, but he definitely made a point of making people feel welcome and getting them to understand him more than just like a quick meeting, like trying to get them involved in some ways of just going a bit above and beyond to sort of help them understand what he was thinking in different ways more than you could of just doing things.
I think when it comes to onboarding, there's like either a specific process, and I know sometimes I've had one-to-ones and they've been so procedural that I've not been led to feel that they're beneficial whatsoever. I feel like they're just box ticking. Much like when you have an onboarding, if the onboarding is just to be like, okay, well, we've got your national insurance number, we've got your bank details, this is where you're going to be sitting. The onboarding I had with the recruitment company I worked in London was pretty good. It's like a new wave of recruitment company that is very, very nice and no like hammering the phones or anything like that. They actually cared a bit about you. So much so that they took us all away to this castle in or mansion, wherever it was in Surrey. And I didn't know anyone. And the next thing I know, I'm like getting really, really drunk with the directors, the CEO of the company.
I think like quarterly, you should have some form of offsite
for sure. And I also think they should always be in the mind as well. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of companies have April bonuses just because they want to retain staff after January, because a lot of people are like, get unhappy in January and they want to leave. And I would hate people to stay just for a cash bonus. But I think if you have like a cool holiday planned or something like that, that's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's part of like the benefits they say of like holidays is like planning them and like the excitement of them. Like, this is outside of just company stuff, but then Tim Ferriss says like every year he goes away with his family, but half the value is sort of actually sort of talking about it and like planning what they're going to do, instead of having the whole sort of involvement with the thing, and like each person gets to like pick a day of where they get to do the thing that they want with everyone to make kind of get like a bit into it. And I think if you can kind of do that with your company as well, it's like, okay, these are the exciting things you're going to do, and sort of, okay, so if you're going for an offsite and like maybe you get to do like archery, but maybe axe throwing, and you can kind of talk about the different things that you might end up doing and give people a bit of involvement and sort of stuff to be excited about is quite cool. But also it costs money and time, and so you need to like work these things out, because you can't just go nuts for these things. But certainly for me, I was going to ask you about, what do you think the most important things that you like doing yourself that you naturally try and do with your friends when you can, that you would actually be able to do with like a company as like a fun thing?
My individual hobbies tend to be things that a lot of other people don't like doing, so I'd probably have to leave those out. So I'd have to think more along the lines.
I'd say like running, for example, in the company that I was in, but literally the office opposite us, the CEO of Settled, they have a running club every lunch. And so after I got to know him, he actually invited me, but it was literally as I was leaving. But they went running for an hour every lunch if you're into running. And that was quite a fun part of the culture. And maybe we could have running club at lunchtime, or like yoga at lunch, those kind of things.
That kind of stuff's really good. But I think it's like, what do I like that I want to do with other people? But what I like doing is the idea of basically taking the entire office and then putting them into a different location for 3 or 4 days. And then you don't talk about work and you are literally just people. There's no like, oh, I'm one of the founder and one of the directors. That doesn't carry over to this new place. The new place you are, it's basically as if you're all at PGL, one of those holiday places that you've all just met each other and you have no choice really but to just get on. Because I think work establishments force you to get on with each other because you have to. But if you just took away the safety net of work and you were basically on holiday with each other, that will force you into a more non-professional relationships. I think there is a benefit to having, controversially maybe, to having non-professional relationships with your working colleagues. Because you're never going to be able to say you and I are going to have a fully professional working relationship. Because it would be like reversing knowing each other as well as we do. We're going to have our professional relationship is going to be bolstered hugely and helped by our personal relationship. But those two things aren't connected. But if you get people who work together and will benefit from liking each other even more so from outside of work, they're going to end up helping each other. And I think that's really, really important. So in answer to your question, I think everything that you can do, you enjoy doing, it should be shared with the people you work with. How about you?
That was the point of my question, of things like that. But as in, the thing I've really enjoyed doing over the last few years is sort of, I really like experiencing different cultures and traveling, but I don't really like traveling just for sort of like the weekend or something. I prefer to like go and be somewhere for like a month at least. So otherwise I feel I don't really get involved in the culture or something, but I love doing that with other people around as well, because it's a bit lonely if I'm only doing it by myself. But I'd love to kind of take business and actually kind of work from like Greece for a month, because of like, I went climbing with a friend where we worked on like a contract together, but on the weekends we went climbing on all these amazing cliffs that were on this Greek island. And it's like, well, we could all just go and live in like a cool Greek island for a month and work, but have fun stuff to do on the weekend. And okay, sure, it's into climbing, but there's like nice hills you can walk or a beach you can be on. So there's still things that other people can go and do, but generally I get involved with like different things and do some fun like cultural Greek things as well in the old evening. And there's lots of cool like working office-y places in the world. And I went to a nice one, like this mountains in Bulgaria, which is like a ski resort, but also like fun place in the summer as well. But it's got like a great co-working place, which is where I met Kaio, who's been like one of the most useful developers that I know. But you can kind of go there for like a month and it's really cheap to like rent places and like for the office space where you're around like other people, cool people that work. We can kind of work as a whole team as well, and it could be a really fun place for us to go, and like not crazy expensive, because it's like when you're in London it's very hard to do things together every evening or like even once a week. It's just get everyone in the office to like commit to a Friday night when like their other friends are around and other things, whereas if you're away for like a week or like a month, like it's natural to actually hang out in the evenings and we'll go to restaurants together and do other stuff, because if you're there as like a team, and like, I think that could be super cool.
I agree. And I thought that it should be responsible, especially under the current circumstances as well. Like things are going to change majorly, like with the, like London office culture. God knows when that's going to come back, if it ever really comes back, like if everything never really go back to normal. So the idea of ever having someone having to go into one office every day is silly. And the only way people are going to be able to have successful holidays now might be through companies doing this sort of stuff, because they're just not going to be able to experience it better. And people would probably rather be with a bunch of other people that they kind of get on with than maybe just going away with one or two other people and not being able to socialize with anyone else or be within like distance of them. So yeah, it's as long as you don't spend all the money doing it.
No, I think we can kind of do that quite cheaply, as in when you do it in sensible places. Depends on doing stuff, but yeah, like place in Bulgaria was actually super cheap and like a really nice place to be.
So basically, if you listen to this, Syncify is going to be the best place in the world to work. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's like kind of the point, as in we need to enjoy working there as well, and like I want to work with people that I enjoy working with. Good. So we've gone through. Now I had one other question that I think is quite interesting, because we've spoken about all the nice things, but the other issue is that how do we remain professional around hiring and firing people without ruining the culture? Because actually very important, and it's very easy when everything's going well to be like, oh, we're going to make this great, amazing, beautiful culture, everything's going to be lovely and flowers, but maybe someone's like slightly underperforming but is a great guy, but we need to fire him. Or maybe someone's a dick but is really useful. Do we keep them on board if they're making money but like ruining the culture? These are two like very important things we haven't spoken about and the hard conversations to have and work out, but we should.
That's a solid question. My experience in the sales environment is if someone isn't paying for their desk, they get let go. It doesn't matter culture or not. The company I worked for before, there were two different exit plans. One of them is like, hey, you are not a really good cultural fit. We don't really have a position that's going to work for you here. What we're going to do is give you 3 months to find another company to work at. And if you want any other experience while you're here, we'll do your best to carve out some time for other teams to give the experience that you need. That was an amazing exit policy. Like, fantastic. People knew we would transition to basically out of the company. The second one was, by the way, your contract is deleted permanently. You're not furloughed. You don't come back to work. Send us your laptop. All this kind of stuff, regardless of culture or anything. I think that when you are a founder of a company and you're responsible for the vision of the company, you have a very good sense of the worth of someone to the business. And especially as companies grow, I think you can be responsible for the bottom line at any step of the journey, but you can't be responsible for the way people are. If I was to, let's say, start the company loads and loads of money, and then I hired someone who started to do the same, and then that person started to become toxic in some sort of way, I hold myself accountable to hiring a toxic person. And as a co-founder of the company, I would make the decision to let that person go, explain specifically why. And I think for a very healthy long-term company, you need to sacrifice revenue over culture. That's how I feel about it. And I also think that when you do let someone go, they should, A, should be very aware why this person's let go. But I also believe that they should see it. They should understand why, because they would feel it quite quickly. If someone sticks out and needs to go, it's very clear and it shouldn't be a surprise when they are. And it's usually for their benefit as well. Like if that person is being toxic, it's for their benefit that they're leaving, as well as the company's.
Definitely. I think there's still a bit of an issue around like people who are great, but maybe just are underperforming. When you don't have lots of money, you can't just afford to be nice to people just because they're nice people. And obviously we'll do everything we can to empower them to do the best job they can, but maybe some people just aren't good enough. And so I think we do need to have a bit of a professional relationship. Besides, we've talked about all the ways that we're going to make ourselves more like friends and have unprofessional relationships with people, but we need to have that level of professionalism at some point, and a 3-month assessment period before you become like fully hired, etc. But it's like you kind of standard, and like have review periods and make sure people know exactly what their job is.
If let's say we raise a bunch of money, like a load of money, right, and we hired some grads, and they are basically like junior entrepreneurs or whatever you want to call them, and they're getting paid whatever the salary is going to be. The expectation on their work is not going to be the same as if we hire a VP of sales who's getting paid 100 grand a year and has super hard deliverables, because the cost to us of having those people there is not huge. So we can afford to move those people around, and we can afford for them to make mistakes. And what we're trying to do is create an environment for them to learn and become one of those people that is incredibly important to the company in terms of what they do and culturally. So I think as you go up the pay scale, the more frank, the more honest the conversations are, and the more experienced people you'd hope would be more capable of having those conversations. But I agree completely. I think everyone has expectation are resting on their shoulders. You and I, we're the people who are going to have to be doing all this kind of stuff anyway. Like we're going to have this kind of stuff on us every single day. And if we ever get bored or whatever, we're going to have this all the time. It's not going to be a Monday 9 to 5 for us. So what we have to do is create this transparency where the expectations are very, very clear. There's a process of, you know, 3 strikes potentially, but also they should understand when they're not doing well. And it's on us for them to do well. It's on us to hire the right people, motivate them correctly, and to hold them accountable when they don't do wrong, and hold ourselves accountable when they don't come through as well. So I think we'll do great at that because we are very forthright of how we see and want the company to do. As soon as you get past a team of 10 to 15, the chances are that we'll have head of marketing or head of sales or VP or whatever. Like you might have a CTO. So it's just up for us to make sure that the people that who are handling those one-on-one relationships are like as clued up as we are what the expectation is. So I guess it's down to management really, isn't it? I'm very much looking forward to people flourishing at Syncify. I'm not looking forward to having to make decisions where people, when I'm gonna be like, this is not the right, I hope we hire amazing people.
I really love finding people that I feel are kind of slightly undervalued and giving them opportunities and like giving them wings to like grow and stuff. And so it would kind of be a very personal.
Yeah, it is. It has to be.
Not work out when I know people. Like,
I was given an opportunity in the company that the chance of getting in and working at the company, ironically, were incredibly low, despite the company not being like having the best reputation anymore. But it, without that opportunity and guidance, I definitely wouldn't be where I was now. So for me to be able to do that now, do it again and give someone else an opportunity to do that is something that I really want to do. But I would feel very betrayed if I gave someone the opportunity to do that and they didn't take full advantage of it. So that's something I'm very aware of as well. Like if people try and take advantage of like a very good offer, that's going to really annoy me quite a lot, because I think you and I are nice people. And although not gullible, we want the best people, but we're just human. We can make mistakes about hiring.
Lots to think about, and hopefully we can do it in a good way. Putting some processes in place, ready for our first hires. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some of our first hires on the podcast in the future as well, which would be nice.
Anyway,
it's going to be great.
I really enjoyed that. Much like conversations, I feel like the conversations become better and more composed after about 40 minutes.
One thing we haven't said actually is, like, I do think the value of book clubs is huge. Like reading the same things and like having people talk about stuff and discuss things like we're doing with Syncifying Syncify. I think Syncify will be useful for our culture if we are listening to the same things and we have reason to discuss stuff with each other. And kind of why I'm doing it in the first place and didn't even mention it at all in this podcast. But I think it's super useful for teams and people in business together to actually do stuff like this. So yeah, we're going to use Syncify on ourselves at a bigger level besides just the podcast. Anyway.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks, Jack. Bye.
Bye.